Off the Ball.
In association with Air. Don't miss live and exclusive Premier League action this month on the Air Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
You're welcome back to Thursday's Off the Ball. Nathan with you this evening. It is 7:30 on a Thursday, so as always, John Giles is on the line. Evening, John.
Evening, Nathan.
So the situation with Martin O'Neill almost seems to be changing on an hour-by-hour basis. When we spoke earlier on today, it looked as though it was a done deal that he was going to Stoke. Now we're hearing that perhaps he's second choice in Kike Sanchez-Flores, the former Watford manager, is their first choice. Now that Martin O'Neill has gone as far as talking to Stoke and showing that interest in Stoke, and the fact he doesn't have a contract with the FAI, is there any way back now for Martin O'Neill as Republic of Ireland manager?
Well, I don't think it's gone too far, Nathan, because we're only going on reports in the television and the press and in the media. And as you said early on today, it looked like a done deal. Now it's not a done deal, and it might not happen anyway. So we don't know the exact situation. I mean, there has been no denial from Mark O'Neill that he is not interested in it. So we have to presume that he is interested in it. But we don't know the exact up-to-date situation in it.
Yeah, like this type of thing happens in football all the time, where a manager of one club talks to another club and people move on. It feels sort of different at international level, maybe because we have such a vested interest in the international side. So you don't really see any long-term damage in terms of the players coming back for friendlies in March, that he's almost a lame duck manager?
I don't think that it would matter to the players. It depends now what happens. You see, I think that it's a fairly complicated situation in this particular case, because I think Martin has an offer to extend his contract, but he hasn't signed it, Nathan. So obviously, until he signs it, he's a free agent. So he's entitled to speak to whoever he wants to speak, whether it be Stoke City or anybody else. So that is the situation. That's not the normal situation when it comes to managers changing clubs. As you say, he's an international manager, but he hasn't signed the contract.
Should the FAI then, the week after the game against Denmark, have sat down with Martin O'Neill and said, listen, we're not happy with the manner of the defeat, but we've decided we're sticking with you until 2020, but you need to sign this contract now. We can't have this sort of situation where you're being linked with club jobs. You need to make the commitment today, and if you don't want to make that commitment, we'll move on.
Well, I think that would have been the sensible thing to do, to be quite honest, Nathan, but it didn't happen. I think when Martin was offered the previous contract, it went on for 9 or 10 months before he signed it. Anyway, so I would agree with you. If the ideal position would be to say to Martin, look, this is the offer. You've got 2 weeks or 3 weeks to make up your mind about signing. But it's probably difficult to do that to somebody in many ways, Nathan. You know, to say, in other words, we're forcing you to do it. But I think there should have been a time limit on it.
Mm.
A reasonable time limit on it.
Your management career obviously went a very different way in that you started out in international management, but do you sense, is there always that pull towards club football, towards having that day-to-day involvement?
Well, I was in a totally different situation, Nathan, to be quite honest. When I was appointed manager, we were in a very, very difficult situation. We'd no money. There was nobody really in line for the job. And two people from the FA approached me to see would I do it or could I do it. So I was doing it very, very much on a part-time basis because I was only 32, I think, at the time. I was playing for Leeds United. Mm. I had to get permission from Don Revie to do this on the basis of which I was doing it. In other words, Leeds United had first choice on me because I was playing. So things were in a bad way. It's totally different now. To my situation. In other words, I took it on a very, very casual basis. There was no real contract. There was no real money in it, to be quite honest. I didn't have any money at the time. There was nobody lining up for the job. And I was probably their best bet at that particular time. And I did it because I thought, well, I don't want any other manager coming in. I was 32, I think, at the time. I don't want any manager coming in that I don't get on with the Irish team, so I decided to do it. But it was very, very much on a part-time basis.
How did you divide your time during those 6-7 years? Part-time player-manager with Ireland, turning into player-manager with West Brom?
Yeah, very busy. Well, again, we didn't have so many matches, Nathan, with the Irish team then. There weren't as many. It wasn't as busy. There wasn't as many tours. Just wasn't. There weren't as many matches. And there was one or two matches I had to miss because it clashed with Leeds United playing in Europe or that. So it was very much on a part-time basis. But of course it was busy. But luckily enough, I knew all the players. We didn't have such a big selection of players. Well, not that we have such a big selection now, but we didn't have such a big selection of players then anyway. And, you know, some of the players that I couldn't go. I could go to watch a few matches, but not many. But I did know most of the players, some of them I played against and I'd known over the years anyway. But it was a different time and a different, totally different situation to the situation that we're talking about today.
If Martin O'Neill doesn't get the Stoke job and he ends up back talking with the FAI, how should the FAI, do you think, approach those negotiations? Did they have a little bit of time now to actually look properly back over the last 3-4 years under Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane and look at the progress and see if they're happy with it?
No, Nathan, he already has an offer of a contract. They don't have to go back over anything. As far as Martin O'Neill is concerned, he has a contract in his pocket that he signs when he wants to sign. Or the situation might be that if Stoke make him an offer that appeals to him, he can tell the FAI, well, I'm a free agent, I can go now. So, like, Martin is very much in the driving seat in here.
Do you still think, because I know that contract was agreed upon even before the Wales game, and it looked a very good decision then 4 or 5 days later when we went and beat Wales. But with the manner of the defeat to Denmark, does it not give an opportunity for the FAI to say, well, actually, you haven't signed this, things have changed, we've looked around, there may be better options, we're just going to move on?
I don't think they can do that. I mean, if there's a contract offered and it just needs to be signed by Martin, I don't think that the FAI would be in a very, very strong position to say, well, by the way, we're withdrawing that contract now. I think they'd be in a very difficult situation legally. I don't know, but that's the way I would see it. I'd see Martin is in a very, very strong position. And I think a lot of people, myself included on this programme, I think Nathan agreed that he was in a very strong position. That, you know, had Martin qualified, don't forget, for the World Cup and hadn't signed the contract, he would be in an even stronger position to go somewhere else. In other words, he's not tied down to the FAI. He never signed a contract. So he's free to talk to the likes of Stoke. And if it doesn't work out, then go back to the original offer.
If he does go, we don't know as yet whether the entire backroom team will go. Again, the speculation was that Keane, Walford, Guffey, everybody, he would take them all with him to Stoke. Roy Keane has been there for the last 3-4 years as a number two. Is he the obvious replacement if O'Neill does leave?
Well, I think it'll be open then, Nathan, to be honest. I think it would be... you know, I think that the job would be advertised. I don't think they would go for Roy Keane straight away. Again, this is only my opinion. He would have to apply the job the same as anybody else who was interested in it. I can't see it automatically going to Roy Keane.
Yeah. Do you get any sense of what Keane's impact on the squad has been as an assistant? Is there any way of noticing his impact around the place?
I don't think so, Nathan. You'd have to be in the dressing room and in the setup to know exactly what he contributed. I mean, he's been very, very high profile as an assistant manager in relation to all the other assistant managers that we know, whether it be Scotland, Northern Ireland, England or Wales. He's been very high profile in that. Now, some would like that. Someone wouldn't be like it too much. But generally speaking, I think when the manager is the manager. You have your assistant, you listen to him, but you go your own way.
Mm.
So I think anything that happens in management like ours, whether it be assistant, if the manager does well, it's his to his credit. If he doesn't do well, then he's to blame. But assistant managers, as I know, in my experience, and I had assistant managers, they were very, very helpful, but only helpful. But they wouldn't have that much influence, maybe not as much influence as people assume they would have.
It does seem, and when you talk about blame and managers having to take the blame, that Martin O'Neill didn't take a lot of the criticism after the defeat to Denmark very well. He thought that a lot of it was was totally over the top, and maybe that is partly influencing his decision to start looking back at Stoke and start looking at a return to club management. Like, is that something he just has to take on the chin, that sort of criticism, when you lose 5-1 at home?
Oh, definitely. I mean, criticism is criticism. I think what happens in football, Nathan, to be honest, when you do well, you get too much praise. And when you do badly, you get too much criticism. That's the nature of the game. It's the same for everybody. You know, if you see managers now, even in, say, in the Premiership, we're having a bad time. Klopp was there a few weeks ago. He was in a bad position. Wenger was in a bad position. It comes and goes. And the affection or criticism changes very, very quickly. And really over the top, either way, I think. But you have to take it. In other words, don't pay too much attention to it when you're getting the credit and take it on the chin when you don't. I mean, look at Guardiola from last year. I mean, Guardiola was questioned last year, you know, is it really working? And it was only his first year. Was it working? Is this happening? Is that happening? And now he's an absolute god. Mourinho is not quite the manager in people's minds as he was a year or two ago. So it changes very, very quickly. But you have to take it on the chin. I think Martin was very, very sensitive to the criticism after the 5-1 defeat. But that was a really bad defeat, as we know. And he didn't take it very well.
When you look at the performances during that last campaign under Martin O'Neill, and we've lost players to retirement, and not a huge amount of young players have emerged through in recent seasons. When you look at the squad as a whole, is it a squad you'd look at and think, yeah, I could do that. A good manager could do something with that group over the next 2 or 3 years.
Well, you can only do what you can only do the best you have with the players you have at your disposal. And I think what Martin was saying at the end, we've done really well to get into this position in the playoffs. The fact that we were beaten, but we did really well to get into this. We punched above our weight, more or less. I never subscribed to that, Nathan, I must say, because when you look back at the matches that we played in, whether it be Serbia, Georgia, Wales, there were no great teams in it. And us playing at our best were as good, if not better, than most of those teams.
Mm. Just to finish it up then, before we move on from the Republic of Ireland and from Martin O'Neill, your sense then is that if O'Neill does stay, like, that there won't be any issues further down the line with the players, and even though there's very few competitive games over the next while, that he'd pretty much be able to continue as before?
I think so. I don't think the players will react. He'd be the manager. He'd be back into the manager situation. Whether the FEI react in a certain way depends on the next couple of weeks, exactly what happens, Nathan. You know, we're seeing the things in the paper now. We don't know exactly what is happening, whether Martin is going to be offered a job or not. My take on it would be that if he's offered a job under the right conditions, he'll take it, because I think he will feel, and a lot of people would feel, that it would be the right time to move from the Irish job.
Is club football far more enjoyable to manage in than international football?
Not necessarily, Nathan. I mean, in international football, you have long breaks. You know, there are only a certain amount of matches over the year. In club football, it's never ending. Mm. I think there's more pressure on club managers than there is on international managers, week by week.
Just in terms of the relentless nature of it?
Yes, exactly.
All right, there's plenty in that there on Martin O'Neill, and we're going to be talking plenty more about that throughout the show, but there's a lot going on in the Premier League as well, with Antonio Conte, Jose Mourinho. We've Liverpool against Manchester City live and off the ball this weekend. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll get to all that with John.
Off the ball.
In association with AIR. Don't miss live and exclusive Premier League action this month on the AIR Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
You're very welcome back to Thursday's Off the Ball. John Giles is still on the line. We have been talking about Martin O'Neill, but we might now go back to the Premier League. We'll get to Manchester City and Liverpool in a moment. But John, I want to talk to you about the ongoing row between Antonio Conte and Jose Mourinho, because it really has turned nasty over the last few weeks. From Mourinho inferring that Conte was a clown with his behaviour on the touchline, Conte responds calling Mourinho senile. Mourinho goes back talking about Conte being accused of match fixing. Conte calls him a little man, then essentially ends up challenging him to a row. Says, I don't know if he's ready to meet me in a room, just me and him. What have you made of it all?
It's very childish, to say the least. And I would have put most of the blame on Mourinho. This is not the first time he's been in trouble with other managers, making dreadful statements and being mean and cruel in many ways. I mean, I think the one that was really below the belt was the match-fixing situation that Conte was totally cleared of years ago in Italy. I think he's been a great coach, Mourinho. I've never liked him on a personal level. If you look at all the rows he's been in and all the things he's done over the year, Nathan, I think he's been dreadful. Dreadful. He's like a spoiled kid, and he's trying to bully his way when things are not going his way. And he's been at it all his career. If you look at it, back at all the things that he did, I mean, first of all, I think he was referring to Conte as a clown because he runs up and down the touchlines. Well, he's run up and down the touchlines numerous times before Conte was even heard of. So I think he's terribly hypocritical in lots of things that he talks about. He's on one time about the diving situation. He loved the English football, and he wants to cut out this diving from foreign players. And he had Drogba in his team for years, and many other players who were diving. So if you look at all his statements, whether we accuse the managers of certain things, most of the things that he's criticised the manager about, he's done himself. So I would have more sympathy for Conte in this, although he's been a bit childish as well, than I would Mourinho.
Is your sense then that this is purely deflection from Mourinho, that he can't let himself get into any sort of a battle with Pep Guardiola, because clearly all we have to do is look at the league table to see who is winning that, that he's looking below, that he's looking around, and he's looking at Conte, who may not be in England for the long term. He's perhaps looking at Jurgen Klopp as somebody. He's looking to pick a fight that he thinks he can win.
Well, I don't know why he picks him. I mean, it's hard to know what psychologically he's like. It's just that what comes across. I mean, don't forget, he had a go at Guardiola a few weeks ago. He said his team lie down, they're getting referees, they're spending much more money than anybody else, so therefore they should be ahead. He's had a go at everybody over the years. He had a go at Wenger years ago, said some dreadful things about him. He poked somebody in the eye in Spain. He blamed the ambulance people years ago for the collision with Stephen Hunt. He blamed Stephen Hunt. He said he intended to do it. I mean, this is nothing new for him. It's just that if he's not on top, I think he can't take. I think he's a very immature fella, Nathan. And when he's not winning, he can't take it. He gets jealous of whoever's winning and hits out all the time. And he's become a bit of a bore, actually, now.
It doesn't possibly instill some sort of a siege mentality within that Manchester United dressing room that they need?
No, I mean, I don't always agree with that siege mentality. I mean, the thing what he's done with the players as well is criticise them publicly. I mean, if you go back to Shaw, the left back, a lot of the players, he's criticised them publicly. And I've never seen that work. I mean, if you go back to Ferguson had his hair dried, he'd gone to players, but it never came out of the dressing room. But Mourinho hits out at everybody. Go back to his Chelsea, when he finished at Chelsea. Look at what he did to the doctor, for example. Look at what he said about Hazard at the time and many of the players there. He had a go at them all. Everybody used to blame bar him. And, he's been a great coach. There's no doubt about that, the things that he's done with various teams. But his behaviour over the years has been absolutely dreadful.
It obviously brings to mind like some of those great rivalries, and the obvious one that stands out talking to you is the Don Revie-Brian Clough rivalry that really came to a head that night on Yorkshire television. Like, that rivalry that had been building up over time, were you looking to Don Revie if Brian Clough had been critical of you as players? Were you looking to Revie to back you up publicly?
Well, Don never criticised publicly as a player. I mean, Clough had a go at everybody, don't forget, in his time. And he was successful at Derby, did very, very good work. But every job is different. I mean, when he came to Leeds, for example, he didn't do a very good job at all. I mean, he's famous for coming in his first time with the players and telling them, get your effing medals and throw them in the bin. We'd just been league champions. There was no respect from him towards the players. Never got the players going at all. Never got the players on his side. But I'd say he I don't think he was as notorious as Mourinho has turned out to be.
You don't think there was quite that nasty streak?
Well, there was a bit bit of a nasty streak, but we wasn't having to go at everybody. I mean, Mourinho's had to go at everybody that we know of. You go through the list and what he's done, and Clough wasn't like, Clough was a very, very arrogant individual. There's no doubt about that, and he wouldn't be the most likable fella in the world. But he wasn't at managers all the time and criticising teams and various people in the game like Mourinho's done over a long period of time.
Was that a more personal grudge between himself and Revy, both growing up in Middlesbrough, that the rivalry that had built up over years?
Yeah, he would have been jealous of Revy, because when he was at Derby, he won the league at Derby all right. But, you know, Leeds, to be fair, dominated him when he was at Derby and before that. Before he probably did it, Notts Forest was a great job. But Don Revy had finished at Leeds at that time. But certainly the job he did at Leeds wasn't good. Nathan, by any means.
That interview, and I know you've spoken about it before, the interview the night that Clough left Leeds United, and he goes on television in one of the most remarkable sports interviews of all times alongside Don Revy. Like, we as players, were we glued to the television that night?
Well, I was very disappointed in Don going on the television. I think Don should have left it alone. He was giving Clough credibility when he didn't deserve it. And Don was defending himself against Brian Clough. You know, Brian Clough was saying, oh, but Leeds... you know, I know you won it last year and you've been champions, but you weren't loved. You know, this was all nonsense, to be honest. I think Don should have ignored him at that particular stage and not given any credibility whatsoever by going sort of toe-to-toe with him on the television. Cluffy was made for television. He was a great performer. I'd say he would outperform even Mourinho at the moment if he was head-to-head on the television. He was brilliant at it. So Don, I think, made a big mistake going on the television that particular night.
Before we let you go, this weekend, the big game, Liverpool against Manchester City. It's live here on Off the Ball. Liverpool selling Philippe Coutinho, but bringing in Virgil van Dijk. Manchester City and now Manchester United both been linked with Alexis Sanchez. Does Coutinho's departure change your thoughts on where Liverpool are going?
Well, I think it proves they're not a big club in world football, Nathan. I think they should have brought van Dijk and kept Coutinho. I think I'd be very disappointed, actually, if I was a Liverpool supporter with them selling Coutinho. Don't forget, in the summer, no money was going to buy him. And I think there was a deal done in the summer that he would go at Christmas. The deal done with Coutinho, that he would play until Christmas, but they would definitely know at Christmas. I think it was all staged, that particular transfer. And if I were a Liverpool supporter, I'd be very, very disappointed in it.
Do these sort of deals not just have to happen if the player's trying to push it through? Like, obviously, no. We can go back to Ronaldo, Cristiano Ronaldo at Manchester United wanting to go to Real Madrid, that he was desperate to make it happen. So, like, did that change Manchester United's stature?
Well, no, really. I think he was determined to go. But what they said is you can go next year. Like, they got the whole season out of him, and they got a lot of money for him. But they spent all that money in buying other players, you know. Liverpool have bought Van Dijk, but they've still got a lot of money in the bank. But they've sold one of their best players is gone. There's no doubt about it. I mean, what they said in the summer, no amount of money will buy him. That didn't happen. They did come to a figure for him to go. But I think, could you imagine Manchester City selling one of their best players? Could you imagine Manchester United now selling one of their best players when they're building a team? I would be disappointed in Liverpool for that.
Do you see any way that they can bring an end to Manchester City's unbeaten run?
Yeah, on their day, I think Liverpool are capable of beating anybody on their day. I think Manchester City are favourites. I think they're more consistent as they have been all season. But it'll be a big, big contest. It'll be a big match. But they are capable of doing it. But I would still go for City on the day.
I might just throw this at you before we leave. We hadn't spoken in advance. But Tommy Lawrence, former Liverpool goalkeeper, who...
Yes.
Passed away yesterday. I know you came up against him, was it 65 Cup final? What were your memories of him?
He was a very good goalkeeper. He never looked the part, Nate. He was always a bit heavy and that. But he did his job. He did it well. He had a good temperament. And he was, well, don't forget, the first time Liverpool ever won the Cup was in 1965, where I played against him. And he won two league championship medals in the great Shankly team, the first great Shankly team. So he did his stuff. You know, he was really good. He was very dependable. And he was a very, very good character and a good lad.
Good stuff, John. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Nathan.
John Giles there, as always. If you have any reaction to that, 53106 is the text number. We will be talking a lot more about Martin O'Neill and the possibility that he leaves the Republic of Ireland job with Shea Given. That coming up at around about 8:30. We've got Richard Dunn on the football show. We've Guillaume Balaguer as well, who's on top of the Quique Sanchez-Flores story. He is currently, his Espanyol side are currently 2-0 up against Levante in the Copa del Rey. So presumably we'll be hearing from Quique Sanchez-Flores after that game. We may get a little bit more insight as to whether or not he's going to take the Stoke job, because it does seem as though he is the first choice. Dan will be joining us as well. But up next, we're going to be talking to an 8-time All-Ireland winner. Mick Fennelly has just announced his retirement, and I spoke to him earlier.
Off the ball on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.